Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another Lights On listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free.
The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Dr. Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse Baptist Church in Santa Maria, California, and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
I see the wind vane waddling and a new wind blowing. Change is in the air. When I first started broadcasting, back in the late 90s, people would complain about me quoting the Bible or using the name Jesus on the airwaves. Rick Blamire ran the station back then. Great guy, by the way. He asked to speak with me in his office. He said some folks who actually liked my show had been calling in with complaints. They were disturbed by me quoting the Bible. And some of them especially did not appreciate me mentioning the name Jesus on the public airwaves. Rick very gently recommended that I back off a bit on those things, and I very kindly explained to Rick Blamire that I could not accommodate these listeners' concerns, but I encouraged him to trust me on this, that I'll take care of it. I'll address it. And I told him, I don't think you're going to have any trouble from these folks in the future. Well, he was hesitant. That was not the answer he was looking for, but he did trust me, and he said, okay, Pastor, to his credit. So, next show. I ran a test on my audience. I said, I am aware that some are concerned about my use of a certain name on my show, that it offends some folks, and I find that fascinating. Really just amazing. This is very interesting to me, so I'm going to conduct a test. And I told my audience, I'm going to mention the name of various religious leaders, and then you monitor your blood pressure and your breathing. All right? And then let me know when your blood pressure spikes or your breathing becomes labored. Okay? Ready? All right, here we go. Buddha. No reaction. Huh. That's interesting. How about this? Confucius. No. Krishna? Nothing. Very interesting. How about Zoroaster? Or how about Muhammad? Nothing. Let's see. None of these names bother any of you. All right. One more. Ready? Jesus. Yikes! Blood pressure spikes all over out there. Good night, lady. Your eyeballs are going to roll right back into your head and fold down your throat into your stomach. Hey, over there, grab a bag. Somebody, please, quick, get a bag to that guy. He's hyperventilating. I think he's going to pass out. You got it good. Okay, listen, breathe, breathe, breathe into the bag. Yeah, there you go. That okay, uh-oh. Looks like we need CPR over here. Code blue, mercy. I guess there is really power in that name. And I challenge my audience to think about something. I ask them to think, you know, why does that name bother you so much? And for some to come off with this idea that of all names, that's the only one you can't use on the radio. And this all started with that first show, by the way, following my meeting with Rick. I got ready to quote a Bible verse, but I warned my audience. I said, okay, folks, I'm about to quote from the book our founders quoted or alluded to more often than any other single book. And I think you know what book I'm talking about. I know I could quote from Mao Zedong's Little Red Book. That wouldn't be a problem. And, you know, I could quote from the Quran, the Baghdad Vita, or some Mesoamerican Mayan holy text if they had one. And it wouldn't be a problem for anybody. But I know I got to warn you, please grab your children, hold your hands over their ears, get a bag ready in case you begin to hyperventilate, grab your phone and get prepared to dial 911 because I'm about to quote from, are you ready? I'm going to quote from the Bible. Yeah, Bible thump alert, Bible thump alert. And then I'd quote the verse and chuckle. And I'd often say, you know what? That wasn't so hard after all, now was it? Your head didn't even explode. What exactly is the reason you fear hearing the Bible read on the radio, I would ask? And what exactly is anyone thinking when they insist you can't read the Bible in public or say the name Jesus in public? What is that about? Where is it coming from? Anyway, my friends, guess what? It all went away. We never heard from those folks again. And what's more, most of those who expressed concern continued to listen to the show. And a few actually admitted that they were actually embarrassed that they had ever brought it up. If I quote the Bible now, some get annoyed, they get irritated or uncomfortable, but more often than not, I'm getting this. People are listening, and many are beginning to think, You know what? The Bible actually makes a whole lot more sense than the nonsense being handed to us or fed to us under the banner of political correctness. There is a change coming. Last week, I talked about how wonderful it is that we have a president who says right out loud in front of God and everybody that freedom is a grant from God and not a gift from government. Wow. And an attorney general who says truth is objective and discoverable. And he reminds Americans that, you know, it is truth, after all, that we're looking for in any investigation or trial. Not someone's version of the truth, but truth, that which corresponds to reality. He ridiculed the absurd notion that truth is a series of perceptions. Now, that's what the progs, you know, progressives want you to think. In that way, they can lie and call it the truth. They can excuse their lies as, you know, merely a different perception. Yeah, so Hillary and Obama colluding with Russia to manufacture a phony dossier on Trump, full of lies, by the way. Well, that's not criminal collusion with Russia in an effort to influence an election. No, but a Trump campaign volunteer who gets indicted for money laundering and some other things. Well, now that proves we're getting close to proving collusion between Trump campaign and Russia in an effort to influence the election. Give me a break. The disparity here, well, it's easily explained. It's simply a matter of what series of perceptions you buy into. But there is a change coming. They're not getting away with this nonsense as easily as they used to. Another crazy Muslim went all Allahu Akbar on us and killed 8 innocent people to the glory of his God. You know, it's funny to me how Muslims can boldly cry Allahu Akbar when performing their public service to their deity, and Christians are afraid to speak the name of Jesus in public. Give me a break. There is a change coming. A young lesbian lady, former WNBA player with the Washington Mystics, Camille Lenoir, I think that's how I pronounce her name, she was offered a coaching position at New Mexico State University when the head coach saw a video in which Camille renounced her lesbianism. They withdrew the offer. She explained that she had become a Christian and that God would not make someone gay, then tell them they can't live that way and then throw them in hell if they did. He does not operate that way. And I say, you're right on, Camille. So I guess for New Mexico State University, lesbians are preferred, but Christians need not apply. Feinstein recently challenged Amy Coney Barrett, a nominee for appointment to the Seventh Circuit Court. She challenged Barrett's confirmation to the court on the basis of her Christian faith. As far as Feinstein is concerned, Christians need not apply. The good news in both of these stories is this. Camille is suing New Mexico State U, not just fading away, and Barrett was confirmed in spite of Feinstein's concerns about Christians presiding on the judicial bench. Imagine, John, someone ruling from the bench from a value base rooted in America's traditional Christian ethos rather than from the Marxist, socialist, antichrist, humanist philosophy that was, frankly, spawned in hell and spat into our educational waters of our culture by God-hating, Christ-rejecting, America-despising liberals. And they say that she's dangerous? Dangerous to whom, pray tell? Certainly not dangerous to the million-plus infants murdered in the wombs of mothers in the name of choice. You know, our culture has become better than the human sacrificing cult of ancient Mesoamerican cultures, only in that we do it in the darkness of a mother's womb to infants, you know, with burning them up with saline solution or cutting them to pieces with a scalpel. Those ancient barbarians, well, now they threw their infants into the mouths of crocodiles or into the burning arms of a statue to Moloch or to Chemosh, or as the Aztecs, they would cut off heads and send limp bodies sprawling down the steps of their altar to hell. But a change is coming. Way to go, Veritas. These NFL kneelers are exercising their First Amendment rights, offending about half the country, but, you know, exercising their rights nonetheless. Using game time, you know, they're on the clock to their employer, think about that, to protest, if a Christian tried to do that anyway, to protest during the national anthem, refusing to heart salute our national emblem, the flag. Why? Well, because of allegations that police officers are brutalizing blacks. Of course, it has nothing at all to do with the fact that these folks are breaking the law and resisting arrest and attacking police officers. You know, it's a perspective thing, right? You ever look at the arrest records of these NFL players, or so many of them? Assault, drugs, domestic violence, driving under the influence, DUI, resisting arrest, disorderly conduct, eluding police, murder? Yeah. And they're kneeling in solidarity with their homies, I guess. But we are noticing that it's just not taking hold, is it? They keep trying to make this thing work, get legs and run, but the climate's changing in this country. The wind vane's shifting, a new wind's blowing. Conservative Americans are not backing down and quietly fading back like they used to. They're speaking up and speaking out. And more importantly, Christians are standing up to the spirit of Antichrist operating in this country and in the name of Jesus Christ asserting themselves in the public square. And that's the way it should be. Ted Nugent posted an excellent piece written by Stanislaus Strew. I can't read it all, but you can look it up on Google. Essentially, he chastises these pampered NFL characters to kneel in the snows of Valley Forge, you know, where the blood of patriots was spilled to give them the liberties they use today to spurn the banner that represents those liberties. And my point here is you're aiming at the wrong target, friends. You would undermine the banner that represents the principles of liberty and justice for all instead of targeting your true enemies. That gang that keeps you enslaved to the state and a culture that breeds contempt for the law and the country that bled to free them. And to close this segment, let me tell you something else. There's a tidal wave building across the globe. Yeah, there are millions of Christians in China, and there is a stirring. They are about to rise up, and you haven't heard much about it, but there are millions of Christians in Iran and Iraq and Saudi Arabia, and they're beginning to stir. There's a stirring. There's a change in the air. It's electric with revival. The gospel of the kingdom is going to roll out over the earth, the gospel versus Marx. Yeah, did you know that in this country there was a day when it was believed by about 90% of the population here that the gospel was the answer to world peace? That the gospel was the answer to God's blessing and favor on a nation, prosperity and so on. That the gospel was the answer to concerns about poverty versus plenty and true justice for all. The gospel says every man is created equal by God and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, equal in value and worth, equal before the law, and equally free to pursue their own happiness and develop their own special gifts and abilities, like these NFL players are allowed to do, and capitalize on whatever opportunities come their way or that they, by hard work and enterprise and trusting God, might create for themselves. Freedom, in other words, where the principal arbiter of a man's fate or future, whatever, was in the hands of God, not government. Marx says from each according to his ability to each according to his need, and then appoints government as the arbiter of how much each must contribute of their ability, and how much each will get to meet their needs. Government defines equality. Government ensures no one has more than someone else. Oh, except the rulers and those they decide to give more to, or except, you know, guys who play football. Like the former communist explained to me when I visited Russia after the wall fell. Everyone was equal in Russia, but some were more equal than others. The gospel says all men are of equal value and have equal standing before the law and are free to believe as their conscience directs. That law is tasked with protecting the liberty and establishing justice for all. And those who do abuse this should be brought under the mighty wheel of these laws. Marxism says individuals have no value. The collective is all that matters. That the law is a variable used by government to control men's lives for the collective good, you know. And the collective good is defined by those in control of the government at the time. Men are slaves of the state, and the state is ruled by the few on the backs of the people. Marxist socialists have crept into our government at virtually every level and almost succeeded to shred the Constitution and bring the free and the brave under the heel of atheistic humanism. But bless God, a change is coming. Marxism and Islamism have a lot in common, you know. Both are systems of slavery to a false god. The usurper god of this world, Satan by various names, including Mammon, by the way, Americans are beginning to wake up. And like I said last week, we must seize the day. Hold on through the break. I'll be right back.
Encounter God. The word means to meet, to experience, to confront. How would you like to encounter God? Maybe it's been a while since you've experienced God in a meaningful encounter. Renew your experience of God with a fresh encounter this year. You can encounter God and know that God is real. Lighthouse Baptist Church, 1310 West Bedarabia Road, Santa Maria.
Stand by. Five, the Brain four, Massage Show three, is about to blow your
Hello, mind. My dear friends. Welcome back. I'm Dr. Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at Lighthouse Baptist Church in Santa Maria, your brain masseur and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singling the enemy is on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. Bergdahl is a confessed traitor, probably gave the confession in a plea deal. It's injustice. It's a spit on the graves of those men who died because of his betrayal, and a slap in the face of those families given the gold star for their sacrifice caused by his treason. But I won't take a knee next time the anthem plays or the flag is raised. The fact that some betray the flag is no reason for me to join them in turning my back on it, too. Think about that. This Sunday, at the Lighthouse Baptist Church, we are having what we call Second Amendment Sunday. Now, what's that all about? The latest Allahu Akbar rampaging murderer accents the need for every American to be armed. Now, out of concern for my time, let me get this point in. The government cannot protect us from this kind of attack without just completely destroying our liberties. That's already happening because of this stuff, and we must resist it. We cannot become a slave to the state as our only means of protecting ourselves from these monsters. Americans need to be armed and prepared to use those arms. Every Islamo-fascist pig needs to be put on notice that Americans are not going to put up with this nonsense. They have brought war into our streets, and so war is what they're going to get. And it's time we understand that and decide right here and now that terrorists are enemy combatants. They have made it clear they are coming here to attack us. And we are fools if we don't arm ourselves and learn how to defend ourselves. On a train ride in Russia across hundreds of miles of country between Moscow and Minsk in Belarus, I shared a compartment with a Muslim man. Now, this is back in 1991. He eyed me menacingly, and I simply smiled at him and offered him some chai, tea. He refused. He spoke to me after, about an hour of silence, it seemed. He said, "We will defeat you." I blinked twice and looked at him a moment, and I asked, "What are you talking about?" Now, at that time, you know, we were pretty naive about all this. He said, "You are a Christian." I said, "Yes." "You are American. You are weak. You are soft. You are like your Jesus. With your long hair, you're like a woman." That's what he told me. He went on to say, "Jesus, he's nice, but weak, like a woman." He said, "Muhammad, he's a warrior. He's strong. He's manly. We will destroy you." I thought about explaining to him the fact that Jesus very likely did not have long hair, that the pictures depicting him in that way came from a Catholic tradition that developed in the Middle Ages, and that I was a Baptist and not a Catholic, but I thought all of that was really beside the point. So I opened the Bible, and I read to him how Jesus took a whip and entered into the temple and drove out the money changers, turning over their tables and condemning them for making his father's house a den of thieves. I wish I had a camera to take a picture of this, but this guy's eyes widened. He said, and he repeated it, "I never hear this. I never hear this. This is not true. Where do you get this?" So I told him it comes from the Bible. And I showed him my Bible. And the cover is, and I put my finger at the words, "Holy Bible." And he was amazed because, you know, they do have some respect for the people of the book. So I opened up to Revelation 19, and I read to him about the coming of the Lord on a white horse with a mighty sword coming from his mouth. And on his thigh is written, "The King of Kings and Lord of Lords," and a great army from heaven following him on white horses on the way to earth to destroy all of the enemies of Jesus. And they would land on top of Mount Olivet, and the great earthquake would open a valley, and the Jews would flee into that valley for safety. And the army of Jesus would come swooping down and gallop up into Megiddo, where the armies of Muhammad and the rest of the world would be gathered together to stand against Jesus. And the armies of Jesus will destroy all the armies of the world until the blood of Jesus' enemies will rise to the horse bridles. And then Jesus will set up his throne in the earth. He will judge the nations with a rod of iron. I'm giving him all this, and I mean, I'm animated, and I'm just going at it. And this, I thought this guy was going to faint. He was all worked up. He'd jerk around, shake his head, muttering something in a language I didn't understand, but I just kept on rolling. It seemed to me like he was about to strike me a time or two, but changed his mind. Finally, he sighed as I ended my monologue, and he said, "I never hear this." And in the quiet, I handed him a Bible in a very friendly way, and he received it. And they left the train at the next stop. Never, didn't say another word for another 20, 30, 40 minutes, whatever it was, and he leaves the train. He looks back at me one time, and he shakes the Bible at me, and he holds it to his chest, and he walks away. Now, almost exactly 10 years later, 9/11/2001, well, you know what happened that day. And since then, it's been one Allahu Akbar attack after another. And of course, there should be a ban against all Muslims coming into this country until, now listen to me, the Muslim people get these characters under control. They're the ones who really need to address this, and if they won't, we'll have to. And by no means is this, or any time, a time to disarm Americans. The need for Americans to be armed and to be trained in the use of arms has never been greater. And that brings me to Second Amendment Sunday. It is time for Christians to shake off the lies Satan has used to neutralize the power of the gospel in this world. Lies that have given people like my compartment friend there in that train ride the idea that Christians are weak and effeminate. We won't get to all of them today, of course, but one of them is this idea that Christians and guns are somehow incompatible. The idea that Christians are supposed to be people who do not resist oppression or who do not stand up to oppressors, who cannot use force to defend their liberties. This is premised, by the way, we didn't believe that in the Revolutionary War, let me tell you that. Now, this whole nonsense is premised on a ruinous misinterpretation of some select scriptures, misinterpretations that have been crafted in the hands of liberals who don't know what they're doing with the Bible. The idea of taking that, they've distorted the great truths like judge not lest you be judged. And they've distorted the truth, turn the other cheek. They've distorted the truth, do not resist evil, and he that lives by the sword dies by the sword. They've distorted these things, coming to conclusions that are not supported by proper Bible exegesis. I'm going to address every one of these during my messages on Sunday, during Second Amendment Sunday, November 5th, beginning at 9:30 a.m., continuing at 10:45 a.m., and then after we go home for a lunch and dinner break, we'll reconvene at 6 p.m. where I'll finish it up. I'm going to present a Bible study clarifying what does the Bible actually teach about pacifism. And then I'm going to deliver my message titled, The Bible and the Second Amendment, on Sunday a.m. You don't want to miss these. And then I'll present my message, War and the Christian Ethos, on Sunday night. And of course, these messages have undergone quite a lot of development. And if you've heard them before, you'll want to hear them again. For the show today, I want to address a grave concern that I have that Christians in particular obey Christ's specific instructions that we arm ourselves for self-protection during the time that he is in heaven preparing a place for us. And you'll find this in Luke chapter 22, verses 35 to 37. Quote, and he said unto them, that's Jesus, when I sent you without purse and scrip and shoes, lacked ye anything? And they said nothing. Then he said unto them, but now he that hath a purse, let him take it, and likewise his scrip. And he that hath no sword, let him sell his garment and buy one. For I say unto you, that this that is written must yet be accomplished in me. And he was reckoned among the transgressors. For the things concerning me have an end. Now right after that, the disciples went and found two swords, and they showed them to Jesus, and Jesus said, that's enough. All right. Now, today, it is true still that Christ continues to be reckoned among the transgressors in most places in the world today. In China, for example, Christians are made transgressors by the Communist Party's unlawful laws. And in America, too, increasingly, laws are being made that are turning Christians, if they keep their faith, into transgressors. We're being reckoned among the transgressors because of what we believe. I hope you're paying attention. Increasingly, laws are being made that make Christians transgressors for practicing their faith. We have an inalienable right to bear arms. Jesus affirmed that right when he instructed his disciples to get a sword. Now, there is debate on whether Rome had a law in those days against citizens bearing swords in public. Let me clarify some things for you here. The Codex Justinianus provided for the right of self-protection for all Romans. And that presumes, of course, the right to bear arms. But in much of Roman history, these rights were reserved and limited to Roman citizens. They were expressly forbidden to the barbarian. Jews were not considered Roman citizens, except in certain exceptional cases, such as Paul being born to a Roman citizen, or a Jew or other non-Roman that managed to purchase citizenship. That's the way it was then. Now, two things are critical to a right understanding of what Jesus instructed his disciples to do that are almost always distorted by people who pretend to know the Bible but are woefully ignorant. Jesus was talking about a physical sword with a physical blade. Notice, the disciples responded to his instruction by producing two physical swords with physical blades. And Jesus didn't say, no, boys, you've misunderstood me. He said, that will be enough for immediate purpose. When he told Peter to put the sword away, it was because Peter was misusing it. The obvious intent was for self-protection and not for advancing the gospel. You don't turn somebody into a Christian by pointing a sword at him. That's something it took the Catholic Church quite a while to figure out, by the way. Second, when the disciples produced the two swords, Jesus said this would, in effect, fulfill a prophecy concerning him. And that prophecy was that he would be numbered with the transgressors. Apparently, there was something about them carrying a sword at that time that was connected in some way to putting Jesus in the company of transgressors. Jesus instructed his disciples that in his absence, responsibility for certain matters that he took care of for them while here would be transferred to their shoulders and become their personal responsibility when he left. And among these was the need for self-defense. In his absence, they would need to purchase a sword. Jesus emphasized this need above the others. He said, if necessary, sell your coat to get one. You know, it's cute how literal liberals become in cases like this, when everywhere else in Scripture, they're loosey-goosey, you know, allowing for about every interpretation imaginable. But here, now you made it clear, Jesus did mean a physical sword. So in that case, only a sword. It doesn't say gun. Good night. Here's something I received from another listener. It's titled, My Lazy Glock. Today, I placed my Glock 22 pistol on the table right next to my front door. I left its clip beside it, then left it alone and went about my business. While I was gone, the mailman delivered my mail. The neighbor's son across the street mowed the yard. A girl walked her dog down the street. Quite a few cars stopped at the stop sign near the front of my house. After about an hour, I checked on the gun. It was quietly sitting there, right where I had left it. It had not moved itself outside. It had not killed anyone, even with the numerous opportunities presented to it. In fact, it had not even loaded itself. Well, you can imagine my surprise. With all the hype by the left and the media about how dangerous guns are and how they kill people, either the media is wrong or I'm in possession of the laziest gun in the world. And he went on to say, the United States is third in murders throughout the world, and that is a disgrace. But if you take out of that equation only five left-wing cities, Chicago, Detroit, Washington, D.C., St. Louis, and New Orleans, the United States is fourth from the bottom in the entire world for murders. These five cities are controlled by Democrats. They have the toughest gun control laws in all of the United States. It would be absurd to draw any conclusions from this data, right? Well, I'm off to check on my spoons, he said. I hear they're making people fat. Friends, the spirit behind the libfibbers in government that are trying to bring all of America under the same laws that are now responsible for escalating gun violence in liberal cities, they're not stupid. They're devious. The spirit of oppression knows the citizenry must be disarmed before they can be easily enslaved. Our founders understood this. We must not forget that. Friend, you've heard me say it before. I'll say it now. I don't trust a government that does not trust its law-abiding citizens with guns. Of course, no reasonable person objects to reasonable regulations, but name one single gun law that would have stopped any of the massacres that have been used to justify those laws. Even gun-hating, except for her own protection, Feinstein, admits no gun law would have stopped Paddock. But I can think of a law that, if encouraged in our society, would go farther than any other law to curb the violence we're seeing in our culture today. How about this one? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But you can't teach that to our kids because Jesus said it. How about this one? Thou shalt not kill. But you can't post that on the walls of our school because it comes out of the Bible. How about we love a God that tells us to love one another, instead of worshiping a God that instructs its people to kill infidels? How about we teach our kids that God is the Creator, who made all men in His image and likeness, and endowed to every man inalienable rights, among these rights the right to life? How about we encourage worship of the one true God and obedience to His commandments, which includes a clear prohibition against killing your neighbors? But no, we have to teach our kids there is no God, that there is no right and wrong, only a series of perceptions, that they came from monkeys. So we devalue human life with our abortion laws and break down the whole structure of morality by encouraging immorality. And does anyone wonder any longer where all this is coming from? Paddock was a perverted, debauched human being who lived a grossly immoral life. God-fearing Christians are not the people doing this stuff. America needs more gospel and less Marxism. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch. Now you call and let me know you see they are on. Call me at 805-714-0785 and say lights on if you agree, lights off if you disagree. You can go to our website. It's brainmassage.net. Just simple. Put the two words together, brain massage, and then .net. And you'll see there a place where you can have an archive of all kinds of shows you can enjoy, other ways to interact with me, and so on. And don't forget to join us this Sunday for Second Amendment Sunday. God bless you. God bless America. And I'll see you in church.